I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. London's Guardian newspaper said at the end of 2013 that they'd only published 1% of Edward Snowden's leaked classified NSA documents. So you know there's a lot more to come. Just today, The Washington Post published an article based on yet another one of Snowden's revelations. And just a couple of days ago, The New York Times published an editorial calling for clemency for Snowden. I spoke about that today with Glenn Greenwald. He was one of two Guardian journalists who first received Snowden's trove of leaked NSA docs 7 months ago. Greenwald is now an investigative journalist for First Look Media and lives in Rio de Janeiro. I asked him if the Times editorial surprised him.
It did surprise me. The New York Times has been somewhat supportive of Edward Snowden, but not very enthusiastically, which is somewhat surprising given that they've published numerous articles now based on the documents that he provided to The Guardian, which in turn provided them to The Times. But this not only was an enthusiastic endorsement of what Edward Snowden did, but a very well-constructed and thoughtful argument about why it is that he shouldn't face criminal charges.
And what does it mean to you that this editorial came from the New York Times, the newspaper of historic record, so it says, and is it a vindication for you?
It's definitely significant. I mean, the New York Times, for whatever flaws it has, and there are many, still is far and away the most influential newspaper, the most important newspaper in the United States when it comes to shaping public discourse, and particularly the views of political and media elites. They also tend to define mainstream thought. So if the New York Times editorially takes a position, it's very difficult to dismiss that position as fringe or radical or extremist or anything like that. So it really brought the idea not only that Snowden deserved clemency, but that he's really a heroic whistleblower who has done a great service for his country, as the Times said, into mainstream thought in a way that's very hard to demonize. And sure, I think it is a vindication, especially for Mr. Snowden, but for the work that we've been doing in our work as journalists with him, when an institution like the New York Times recognizes how beneficial it has been for everyone to learn of these things.
What has your life been like since you sat down last year to speak with Edward Snowden in Hong Kong?
It's been, I guess the best word for it would be intense. And, you know, it's been intense on a lot of different levels. Obviously, when you're in the middle of a sort of major media storm, when you suddenly have in your possession tens of thousands of top secret documents from the most secretive agency of the world's most powerful government, then obviously there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of significant and difficult choices that you have to make. You get attacked in lots of different ways. The extent to which your journalism is scrutinized and even your personal life intensifies. So all of those things have definitely happened and have created a lot of pressure. At the same time, when you go into journalism, the thing that you hope to be able to do is to work on a story like this one. And so it's been very invigorating and fulfilling for me, especially given how much work I've done over the years on surveillance.
And for you, Glenn Greenwald, where did those political values come from? If you have to dig way, way back, was there a formative moment?
You know, I mean, I think that we all probably have experiences throughout adolescence when we're sort of discovering who we are that shapes not just our personal values, but our political values. And I've talked before about growing up gay in the 1980s when, you know, there was a great deal of kind of hostility towards gay people, especially in the suburbs. And it sort of creates this, you know, this reaction in you, and there's different people who react in different ways. And I think one of the ways that I reacted was to question the entitlement of institutions and people purporting to have authority to issue these kind of decrees, and rather than just blindly accepting these decrees, sought to examine them and their entitlement to make them. And I think it has just led me to be a more kind of critical person and more skeptical of the pronouncements of institutions that aren't accompanied by very clear evidence.
How would you describe your own legal situation at the moment? I mean, what would happen if you came to the U.S. right now?
It's unclear, and I don't think anyone really knows the answer to that. We have had lots of lawyers who have looked at the situation, all of whom say that there's some non-trivial risk that, given the history of the Obama administration when it comes to secrecy and journalism and press freedoms and whistleblowers, that if I tried to return to the United States, I could be charged or prosecuted or at the very least served with a subpoena. Obviously, my partner, when he was working in conjunction with myself and my fellow journalist, Laura Poitras.
Right, that's David Rivera, who was detained at Heathrow Airport.
What's the, yeah, at Heathrow Airport, right? He was detained for close to 11 hours under a terrorism law that is designed to investigate terrorism. And then when the UK had to defend what it did, they said, well, we think the potential publication of these documents is a form of terrorism, essentially equating journalism and terrorism. So you see the US and the UK governments both reacting in a rather extreme ways to what is clearly the largest national security leak in American history. And so there's no sure bet when it comes to trying to figure out what they'll do next.
So living there in Rio in Brazil, do you feel like you're in kind of exile?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely intend fully to come back to the United States. I refuse to let myself be exiled for the crime of committing journalism. I want to make sure that I have a better idea of what the options and the risks and the probabilities are before I do that. You know, I've lived in Brazil for 8 years, so it's not unusual for me to be here. It's unusual for me to feel like I can't safely return to my own country. But that's just the nature of doing this sort of journalism. If you do journalism that angers and is adversarial to people with a great deal of power, they're going to do things back to you. That's the nature of having power. And so none of this really surprises me. I had a good idea that a lot of this would be happening when I decided to do what I did and definitely consider the price worth paying.
How often do you speak with Edward Snowden?
I speak to him regularly, quite regularly.
And do you talk about, like, these issues? Like, what's at stake if we both go back to the United States? I mean, I think it's pretty clear right now for Snowden.
Sure. And, you know, it's interesting. When we were in Hong Kong, the three of us, myself, Laura Poitras, and Edward Snowden, we talked about what we all thought were going to be the likely consequences for each of us in terms of what it is that we were doing. And we assumed that he was going to end up in U.S. custody sooner rather than later and probably facing charges that could put him into a prison cell for the next several decades. But Laura and I also talked about how, as journalists, we were likely to be targeted in all sorts of ways as well. And sure, as it's all played out, we continue to talk about those things. But actually, I think the prevailing sentiment among the three of us is that things have gone wildly better than we ever anticipated that it would, not just in terms of the intense debate and interest level that has been provoked around the world, sustained now for more than 6 months, but having a federal court rule that the program we exposed is against the law and unconstitutional, having huge swaths of the American public change how they view issues of privacy and civil liberties versus the threat of terrorism, all sorts of elite institutions coming to the realization that the NSA is a rogue and out of control and dangerous institution. I mean, that's generally more what we spend our time talking about. The risks are something that we just knew were always there.
Journalist Glenn Greenwald speaking with us from Rio de Janeiro. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.